Okay, ready? Recast our show. Go, women.
Sure, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, sitcom stars.
Jerry Seinfeld and Joe Costanza, famous movie pairs.
Brennan and Dale, the Step Brothers. Cartoons.
Easy, Woody and Buzz. Musicians.
Let me think. Bruce Springsteen and... I know. Clarence Clemens.
Sorry, too late. I win.
Which makes Mark our big winner!
Let me win!
Absolutely nothing!
The following podcast contains graphic descriptions of international celebrating and global merrymaking. It may not be suitable for angry or unhappy audience members. Listener discretion is advised. You've been warned.
Have you ever seen any of those foreign films? I don't like them.
Good news! Good news!
Some are born great, others achieve greatness, and some watch Christmas movies.
For Natale!
Both festive, aren't they?
Joyeux Noël!
Ooh, and we are the festive foreign film fans! I know I do this every late September, Mark. I love that it's October! It's a time of year. Sun started to go down. It's getting darker a little more every day. Shadows get larger. Air gets cooler. There's a big orange moon in the sky. Oh my gosh, it's spooky season.
You do love your Halloween, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think from a season perspective, I love fall. From a holiday perspective, I love Christmas. But fall and Halloween are wrapped up together. It's a close second.
I love fall too. My favorite time of the year. Football.
Yes.
Surprised they didn't say PSLs right from the beginning, because, I mean, your skin turns orange every year.
It's either the pumpkin spice lattes or the pumpkin beer.
I'm surprised, too, that you didn't even talk about the 13 beers of Halloween
yet. I know. I haven't got there yet. I mean, it's not October yet, but a week away. But you know that's when all the spirits are going to come out.
Yep.
Trees are going to drop their leaves.
Yep.
Now that Mark and I are together on the podcast, we both are each other's advocates for achieving both the 13 beers of Halloween and the 12 beers of Christmas.
That's what I look forward to.
To the chagrin of my wife. She's like, okay, you did the beer. Do you have to do the Christmas one?
Yes. Yeah, why is she asking that?
I know.
Well, you know, it's interesting, but I would say this about Halloween. I'm not against it, but I'm not for it either. I could care less about Halloween, to be honest.
Really?
Yep. I mean, again, it's beautiful. I love the festivities with grandkids. They're all getting dressed up. But like growing up, I really didn't dress up. I didn't go to Halloween parties. In fact, my schools didn't even allow Halloween marches.
Seriously.
And so like, Sue loves Halloween immensely. I could take it or leave it. All the other fall stuff, though, I mean, I like football. I love the chilly nights when you put on a sweatshirt. From a Halloween perspective,
So was there a reason why your school wouldn't let?
Well, I think it's because there's a Catholic school. And this is in the 60s and 70s. In fact, when the kids were young, we were living in Delaware before we moved here, I would always volunteer to take the kids out trick-or-treating because I could care less about the little shits coming to my house. I still feel that way. Other than my grandchildren, I really don't care if I see a person dressed up for anything.
What is shocking is you and I, as good friends as we are, you feel that way, and I'm the guy who drives the hay wagon with all the kids, and I love it.
And I think it's so cool. It's not like I'm a bah hug.
I think you don't have the nostalgia. A lot of it is you're reliving what you went through. What really stuns me is you always heard about Halloween out east. They always trick-or-treated at night. Here in the Midwest, it would end like dusk. Right. You had to go back in the house.
Yeah.
Out east, you started trick-or-treating at 7 o'clock when
it got
dark.
That's what we did. I mean, a few years that I remember going trick-or-treating, it was always that dark. We didn't have the special hours. What is the world's perspective on Halloween? I found some research, Bob. I went out, and there's a research done by this research company, and they tried to find out what are the most celebrated holidays. Mm-hmm. And they took some pretty liberal approach to it. Like, they looked at purchasing. They looked at some of these are going to be religious holidays and the amount of people who attend services. Stuff. So the researchers looked at multiple things. But the good news is Halloween does show up in the top 10 most celebrated holidays.
Throughout the world. Really?
Yep. Guess what number one is?
It's Christmas.
So Christmas was one.
All right.
Hanukkah was number two. Three was New Year's.
Kwanzaa.
No, three was New Year's.
Okay. Yeah.
Four was Chinese New Year. So they split that out.
Okay.
Between New Year, because it's celebrated two
different times. Yeah.
Ramadan.
Actually, I'm surprised it's not higher because so many people in China.
Yeah. Number five was Ramadan.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Number six was Easter.
Okay.
Number seven, this shocked the crap out of me because this is also another holiday. I'm like, wah, wah, wah. Valentine's Day. Number eight was Diwali.
Oh, very colorful.
And near the bottom of the top 10 is Halloween.
Just made it in. Wait, Diwali is more, well, I guess there's a lot of people in India. Valentine's Day is more popular than Halloween?
Yeah, based on their research. But again, the purchasing, think about all the poor saps who think, oh, this is how I'm going to show my love. I'm going to buy really expensive flowers and cars, blah, 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 blah.
See, I picture you as like the big teddy bear with like coming home with the little heart of candy under your arm. And
never bought one of those hearts.
And roses. Nope.
And number 10 was Bodhi Day, B-O-D-H-I.
B-O-D, I don't even know what that is.
Bodhi Day is a Buddhist celebration. Buddha supposedly got all his wisdom by sitting under the Bodhi tree. And so it's celebrated in early summer, late May, early June, and sort of celebrate his getting all this infinite wisdom that he then passed on to all his followers.
You know what? I'm filing that away in the back of my head. I want to know more about Bodhi Day. I've never heard of that.
Really? This is my way of validating your hyper-focus on Halloween to say you are an international man who is better than me because I would have crossed out Halloween. I would have crossed out Valentine's Day.
You just can't participate.
Let's move on.
It's really because we're nutty and obsessive, most of us holiday people,
Most of us, yeah.
So, speaking of nutty and obsessive, we need to review tonight's feature film. But before we do that, we have some stickers looking to be handed over. So, you will be resettling them, these stickers, to your own secret location if you knew the answer to last episode's festive fun fact. Honestly, I have to admit, there are sometimes I can figure out or I know the answer to the trivia. This one, I had no idea.
Oh.
And what is tough is to determine whether this was an actual plan or kind of a tongue-in-cheek plan or not. But we had visited Hong Kong and wanted to know the British secret relocation plan before they returned Hong Kong back to the Chinese in 1997. They had discussed building a new city and moving the entire population of Hong Kong to where? And the answer was Northern Ireland. I mean, if you think about this, the government officials raised the idea of resettling the entire 5.5 million residents of Hong Kong to Northern Ireland at the height of the troubles there in the 1980s. And I don't know if they thought this was some way to help their situation by putting 5 million more people there, but it was proposed that a city-state be established in McGilligan, which is between Coleraine and Derry, because the Hong Kong population would have no political future after the territory reverted back to the Chinese rule. So they said, look, it's going to be so bad, you're going to want to get out of there.
Yeah.
How about everybody just come move to Ireland? And so what they did to test it, 50 Chinese families were resettled to Coleraine. So they were there. And because they had moved there, it was considered that the Chinese do not find the Northern Ireland climate objectionable and they can get on reasonably well with the current inhabitants because 50 families were there. Now let's bring 5 million people.
Oh, that's crazy.
It is. It's so funny. Could you imagine?
I can't.
Shh. In the middle of the night, we're going to sneak them all out.
They'll never notice.
If you knew about this great migration and plan to resettle somewhere more desirable, you have earned a way to make the moving boxes look more colorful with their 4F sticker.
Wow.
Plus, you can use us, the Festive Fans, as your bubble wrap because we are super dense and full of hot air.
We are super dense.
Just listen to the first 10 minutes of the show.
I got us all off topic. I feel bad.
No. Now we get to travel to a land of beautiful landscapes, wild animals, mountains, deserts, vineyards, and savannas with star-filled skies. It is a place that now shines with a hopeful future, but is still marked by the dark shadows and human ugliness of the past. We are headed to South Africa to find Christmas in a country that has overcome exploitation, apartheid, and decades of injustice.
Want to watch a Christmas movie?
Christmas movies are our bread and butter.
We eat Chinese food and watch Christmas movies.
I heard it's the best Christmas movie since Home Alone.
Tonight's movie is called Liebe Kerstfeiernde.
Or you say that so much better than me.
I practiced. It's translated into Dear Father Christmas. And so let's talk about the actors and actresses in the movie. The first one is Mila Guy, plays Nani. Mila is a South African actress and costume designer who's best known for her breakout role in this film. Oh. She was great. She was born in South Africa, but moved to New Zealand when she was in middle school. She returned back to South Africa for college and graduated with a BA in drama from the University of Pretoria. In 2014. After she graduated, she joined the cast of a TV soap opera and then made her film debut in 2015.
Yeah, these people are so young.
I know. Now, she later joined the mockumentary comedy series Hotel, where she was a regular for 5 seasons. She's also done work on radio and is a singer as well. Everybody's a singer.
Everybody's a singer.
And her role as Nani in Liebe Kerstfeiernde, Mila was nominated for a Silver Scream, which is like a Silver Screen Festival prize for Best Actress at the Silver Scream Festival. This film festival is held annually in Campus Bay, South Africa, and is one of the only Afrikaans film festivals in the world.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The next actor who plays Herman is Mon Vese. Mornay, I guess it is an actor born in Cape Town, South Africa. He's not only appeared in South African films, but he's been in American films and television on platforms like HBO and Netflix with actors like Forest Whitaker and Molly Ringwald.
Didn't he look familiar? He looked familiar
Absolutely.
To me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he totally did.
Yep. He received the Best Actor nomination for his role as Herman at the film festival and earned the Best Actor Award in TV drama for the series Justice Served at the South African Film and Television Awards.
Okay.
And then the last one is the little boy, or 12 years old, Alof Snyman plays Hugo. Alof made his film debut in this movie when he was 12.
He doesn't seem 12 in the film, though. He seems like about 8 or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Yeah.
Because I know that typically happens, older ones, but he seems much younger than 12.
He started appearing in commercials as a baby and appeared in a number of local and foreign commercials. Alof has since appeared in movies and television series. He's from Cape Town. He's also a singer.
Oh my gosh.
His dad is a popular singer in the band Brower, which means brothers in Afrikaan, that had a big hit called Huistone, which means home, in 2008. And that was named Best Song of the Year. So he's got some talent in the blood.
Wow.
And,
yeah,
he's got some DNA that would help him. My poor kid's got nothing.
Oh, he's a Nepo baby.
He's a Nepo baby. That's right. So let's talk about Dear Father Christmas. So great opening scene. So the movie opens and there's a cute little video of Nani when she's about 5. In the video, her dad is playing Father Christmas and he's asking her, you know, giving her presents and kind of asks her what she wishes for Christmas. And she sort of gives the camera sort of this confused look. And she said, I don't know what that is. And the dad starts to explain it, but then that video cuts out. Yeah. But then you fast forward and Nani is now 18 and Hugo is around 12. It's Christmas morning and mom and dad and Nani and Hugo are all sitting around the tree. They're exchanging presents. And then the mom was like to the father, open this present. And he's sort of like, oh, why do you want me to open this? Oh, just open it. And when he opens it, it's a divorce papers.
I know. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah. And the mom goes, surprise. His name is Moses, and he's offered me his heart and a role in a play and a traveling show, which really turns out to be the circus. And yeah. So the dad sets the Christmas tree on fire, and then he jumps off the roof. It lands on a birdbath as the mom is waving goodbye to the family. And I'm like, wow.
What a start.
What a start.
And it's handled kind of, I wouldn't say not seriously, but not comedic. It's kind of bold. It's just played like it's for real.
Well, I mean, it's just, I think there's a shock involved. Yeah. I wouldn't expect that to happen. So Nani quickly has to jump in and run the family, right? She enters and wins a beauty contest because they needed the money. And it's ironic that she gives this speech about her family being the rock. Meanwhile, mom's left, dad has locked himself pretty much up in his room, and the little boy, who is super, super bright, but is still afraid of the dark at night. So she enters this contest and wins. She's working a job in a fast food place. She's cleaning houses, washing clothes. She's just a sweet kid. She makes sure Hugo gets fed every day and is taken to school. She reads to Hugo every night.
The
mean girls are mean to her. She keeps saving money. And then at one point, she asks her friend Wart to drive her to the bus station because she has randomly picked that she's going to go to Greenland by throwing a dart against the wall, and it landed on Greenland. But she doesn't leave, of course. That would ruin the movie.
I wasn't sure, though.
I wasn't either.
Because she seemed very intense. She was going. And I was actually feeling so sorry for the little boy.
I was like, where is this going to go now? Yeah. But she doesn't leave. And while this is all going on, her's taking care of the family. The dad, who is the town psychologist, is a hot mess, man. Maybe for good reason. Wife has left him with the kids, left him suddenly. And he's not eating at all. He's barely going to work when he does. I love how he's the one person, his patients, telling him about all their woes, and he's fast asleep in the chair. But Nani, being the good caretaker, keeps checking on him. And one day she brings him a bowl of cereal, and he tells him, hey, we have to have a family meeting. We need to talk. Let's have dinner tonight with all of us. I have something important to tell him.
Which I took to mean things were getting better.
Well, they did get better, Bob, because at the dinner table, which there is no dinner table when they sit down at the dinner table, because he's announced that he is going to become Father Christmas. And the table is missing because he's starting to make toys with the table. And I should say it's worth noting that several times during the movie, there's flashbacks to the previous Christmases. We also see that during the movie, too, when Nani is stressed or upset, she goes and she hides under her bed. She goes in there and just stares at the mattress above her. But during these flashbacks, we see at one point that Nani didn't know how to write a letter to Father Christmas, and so her dad helps her write a letter. Mm-hmm. But this new announcement now, Herman has found his meaning. Hugo's excited. Wow, you're going to be Father Christmas?
Awesome.
That's pretty cool. You know, Nani, she's not really too sure. So she goes over and she sees her best friend, Wart, and they're having some sherry together. And they decide, well, maybe we should get some professional help here. And Wart reminds her, well, your dad's a town psychologist.
Who do
you go to? So they decide to go to sort of the general practitioner doctor. And the doctor's like, well, you know, your dad's been through a lot. This might be his path to healing. He may need to process this whole idea of Father Christmas just to get through it. Maybe be supportive of him. And she's like, meanwhile, you know, I'll contact the doctor or the hospital where he got treated when he fell, and we'll see if they have anything to say. But meanwhile, try to be supportive. And Nani, being the sweet little heart that she, sweetheart that she is, she's like, okay. And so she goes out and she starts going to all over the village, trying to say, we really need your help. Really want to help my dad get through this. We, even though it's April, we're going to have a countdown for 2 weeks that we're going to celebrate Christmas. Mom, who's left, stops by and see the house being painted red. The lady who runs the daycare has little kids painting their house so red, funny. Herman's house red. And the mom's like, what's going on? And she's like, Mom, leave dad alone. You left. You don't care about us. And she's like, if anything happens, I'm going to take Hugo away. Nothing better happen here. the nun. He's like, get away, get out. We don't want you here.
Go back to the circus.
Go back to your traveling show. But around town, I mean, the ladies are baking, the carpenters are building tools, the sewing club makes him this brand new Father Christmas outfit, which is adorable. Hugo and Herman come up with this grand design for lighting up the house, and everything seems in harmony. Everything is starting to improve. The whole town attends the lighting of the house, yeah. And it's a big celebration. But Herman's like, you know, we don't have a Christmas tree. And so Nani and Wart go out in the wilderness to find a tree. Their car battery dies. And we should say, too, there's just a little romance bubbling to them. Yeah. So they sort of spend the night under the stars holding hands. And the next morning, Nani gets woken up by the constables. Hey, Hugo has fallen. He's hurt. And so they run back to their house. And sure enough, there's Hugo, who could care less that he's hurt.
Yes.
And he's like, what happened? And he's like, well, Dad was showing me how he's going to climb up on the roof and go down the chimney. And I really wasn't sure how to do it. And I fell and I broke my arm. And he's happy as could be, right? It's an adventure. But unfortunately, the mom was called too. And she's like, I'm taking Hugo with me. You guys can't be trusted with him. So Nani is furious that she's let Hugo get hurt, that Hugo is now being taken away. Nani has, in essence, become his mother.
Yes.
She's mad. She sets his Christmas suit on fire. And so they're now running out of money. Wart says, well, Nani, you won one pageant. Maybe you can win another. So Nani enters this contest again. And you mentioned the mean girls. The mean girls take her dress and her shoes that she's going to wear, and they cut holes in it, and they write ho, ho, ho on it. So Nani now has to go in front of the judges, you know, answering a question about why her family's so important. And she starts off almost the same speech she had gave earlier, but then she sort of stops and she's like, you know what? I'm afraid of the unknown. I'm afraid of being lonely. My family is completely dysfunctional. My brother reads books, but he's afraid of the dark. My dad is Father Christmas. He's completely nuts. But he doesn't know that I know that he checks on me every single night. And so the audience just falls in love with it. Nani probably giving an award-winning speech. And so she starts walking off the stage and goes back and punches the girl right in the face who tore her dress.
Don't you think she thinks she lost?
I think she knew she won. Oh. I think she was more of like a big up yours pageantry, up you, all you uppity girls.
Interesting.
I think she...
Okay. I thought she thought, you know, because like how she just described her family and the way she was looking.
But I think the judges, when I was watching, it seemed like they were being responsive to her honesty and her love for her family, even though her father is Father Christmas. Nani gets word from the doctor that they need to see her. Before that happens, actually, Nani and her dad and Wart decide to go rescue Hugo from the circus. Yeah. But meantime, Hugo had broken away anyway with the stepdad's car and started has him chasing around. So they're all back together. They're back at their house, and Herman collapses. And so he goes in the hospital, and we find out that the doctor is telling Nani that her father had been treated before, even before he fell, and that he's very, very sick, that he has brain cancer. And she looks at her mom and said, did you know about this? And she said, I did, but your dad told me I couldn't tell you anything. And she's like, did you know about this before you left him? And this is the part where I'm like, I thought she was going to say no. She's like, well, yeah, I did, but I wanted to be married to a man who wanted to fight for life. I'm like, wait a minute. You left him for another guy on Christmas Day, knowing that he was dying from brain cancer? Yeah,
yes. Yes.
I said some bad words about her.
I know.
Yes. It's horrible. Nani goes to visit her dad. He's in a coma, holds his hand. The room is decorated in Christmas lights. And, you know, she tells him that she always believed that there was someone who could read her letters and make her dreams come true. And she goes, Dad, I know that was you. Mm-hmm. He told her that her wish was always been that, and we had never seen this on the video before, was that she always wanted a father who would love her and for her to have a dad to love. And so she asks Father Christmas that night if he could have one more chance to see her dad. And it breaks away, and I'm begging, please, I know. Please. But unfortunately, Herman dies. Nani goes home and she tears down all the decorations. Nani goes back under her bed because that's the place she goes to. And she sees that letter. So she's been looking at the letter her father helped her write years ago. That's what she's been looking at. But now taped to that is a little VHS type tape in there. So she plays it. The tape encourages her to go on, to stay strong. He goes, I wish that you would climb out from under that bed and never go back, that you do everything that makes you happy. This is my wish for you. You deserve nothing less. I love you so much. Love, Dad. And then I thought, well, okay, that's the end of the movie. But actually at the funeral, Nani and Hugo and Wirt decide he shouldn't be buried in some cemetery. So they actually steal the casket and they go dig a hole in the side of the mountain and they bury him. And as they're kind of sitting up there that night, all the Christmas lights come on. They kind of try to honor Herman and they decide, well, that's their inspiration. So they start delivering all the toys Herman had made for the kids in the village. And that's then how the movie ends.
And I thought it was going to kind of end at the funeral.
So did I.
And when they did that, I loved that.
Oh, absolutely.
I loved it.
Totally agree. Totally agree. So, Dear Father Christmas, was it festive, Bob?
Mark, if I were to tell someone this is the story and this is what happens, it sounds incredibly depressing.
Yeah.
And it sounds like I would hate to watch that at Christmas time. I found it so festive. I loved it. And, you know, two things, like when you think of the word charming, I found this is like, it personifies charming.
Yeah.
But also it was touching. Oh my God. The scenes when she finally fesses up and talks about it, Hollywood, she would have had moments with him.
Right.
And that she didn't, it just crushed me.
Right. You and me both. I was hoping Hollywood would rally in there, but I agree with you. I think it was everything you said. It was very festive. I was totally sucked into Anani.
Yeah.
And
Hugo, too. Both of them were really good. No, but I know what you're saying. She's like the heart, that true heart of the film, and plays it so well.
Yeah. I felt her love a lot of times. I mean, it was sad, but I also felt a lot of warmth as I watched it. What about you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, I'd say divorce, death, craziness, dysfunction. No. I felt such incredible warmth from the family and how she was holding them together. But I mean, there were moments of doubt, like she was going to leave, but she just couldn't. It was great. And this is one of those films that I know I will watch again.
Absolutely.
Because I felt so good at the end of the film. And even though he dies, and I didn't want him to die.
Right.
But just how they honored him.
Yeah, and at the end, there is a little scene at the end after they deliver Christmas. That's truly the last scene that I think is just very heartwarming. And I will definitely watch again. I would recommend this to anybody watch. You know, it's interesting about the emotion of it, too. I was seething in anger at that mother.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, what's interesting is that the film didn't focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, the writer, director just sort of let you deal with that on your own as they're watching the movie. But I was hoping Nani was going to punch her in the face.
I know. And they didn't demonize her. She seemed almost kind of flighty. You know,
she
like,
did seem
like,
flighty. Oh,
you know, like, I'm leaving.
And there is the one scene when Herman sees her at the circus instead. I do think they have a moment of reconciliation, too, between them when he shows up and she says, well, I've been expecting you. But anyway, you know, I want to say Merry Christmas in Afrikaans?
I would love to learn how to say it.
Me too. I was hoping you would tell me. Goeie Kersfeer. Goeie Kersfeer means Blessed Christmas in Afrikaans, which is the official language of South Africa. It's developed from the Dutch language that was spoken by European settlers in South Africa, and the enslaved population that was there. So they used that language.
You can totally hear the Dutch in all of these words,
absolutely.
You know.
Yeah, the hushevend, especially. So although you would most often hear Afrikaans or English, you'd hear them say Merry Christmas in languages like Dabale, Sasutu, Susa, Sperde, Swazi, Renda, Songa, Setswana, or Zulu dialects.
I can't believe you could say all those. Wow.
Yeah, so
now can you say Merry Christmas in all those dialects?
It says that if they speak English, they say Merry Christmas, Bob. I agree with you. Listening to the movie background, sometimes I almost wanted to turn off the closed caption because I felt like I was hearing familiar words.
Yes.
Let's talk about some of the customs, though.
Okay.
So on Christmas Day, we're starting off with food.
Oh good.
Because I'm doing this. Now, on Christmas Day in South Africa, most families enjoy a braai, which is a South African barbecue. They move their meals outside, right? The Christmas braai is a festive tradition where families and friends gather to celebrate the holiday with a barbecue. I mean, it's the central part of the Christmas festivals and is accompanied with music and games. Braais are held in backyards, but they're also at campsites, and they enjoy the warmth of the South African summer weather. So can you imagine having a barbecue on the beach?
I think about that, and it's so opposite. Big barbecue and have everyone over. In some ways, I would love to try that, see what it would be like summer Christmas.
Now, another food item, which be curious what you think about this, but beef tongue. Blah, 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 tongue.
Whether they serve it with sauerkraut?
I'm going to bring you Sue sauerkraut.
Oh, maybe.
That way, if you don't like it, you'll be insulting her. Okay. Beef tongue is a Christmas food staple in South Africa. It has to be boiled until it's so tender you can peel it. It's simmered for hours with onions, carrots, bay leaves, cloves, garlic, ginger until it melts in your mouth. So, I mean, there's a lot of good flavors there.
You know, if you didn't tell me it was tongue, I might be okay.
Yeah, so if I say, Bob, I want to give you tongue.
I might call the cops.
It's served cold and thinly sliced and most likely will come pre-brined or pickled. It's then served with a tangy, sweetened honey and spicy mustard sauce.
Oh, that sounds good.
It does, right?
It really does.
I think we'd have to get over our own bias there. Gammon or cured leg of pork is another popular choice for South African Christmas tables. Pigs used to be slaughtered in the fall, making cured pork-like gammon readily available for consumption during the winter months. I shouldn't say it used to be. It still is.
Yeah. They're probably not slaughtered at home, though, now.
The term gammon derives from the old French word jambe, meaning leg. The word gammon now is more closely tied to the hind leg of a pig. It's different than a ham. It is wet cured, so it's moist, and it's brined, so it's a little salty, and it's sometimes it's smoked, but it has to be cooked before eating.
You know, that's so interesting to me because, so it's ham, brined, so it's salty. I would like that. And smoked, I would like that. Wet cured, so it's moist. I don't know what that means. Have you ever had moist?
I haven't.
That doesn't sound appealing.
It sounds like I would have to have someone coach me through that. But just like the tongue.
But then they cook it.
Maybe it's the way it's cured. I don't know.
Yeah.
So let's talk about other popular culinary favorites.
Ooh, more food.
Yeah, including the peppermint tart. This is a chocolate bars used in recipes that this was created in South Africa. The peppermint crisp chocolate bar was originally manufactured by the Wilson Roundtree Company in 1960s. Chefs quickly realized that the bars could be broken into little bits and used for toppings or stirred into their baked goods, offering a refreshing, chilled, minty, chocolatey flavor and a bit of crunch. The peppermint crisp tart is now a beloved South African Christmas dessert that originated in the 1970s. The recipe was simple. It is layered with a combination made with tea biscuits. So tea biscuits are a South African brand of coconut biscuits known for their crisp, buttery texture, and a sweet coconut flavor. On top of these, you add caramel, whipped cream, and a crumbled peppermint crisp chocolate bar. It's very popular because of the textures and the flavors, and it's now a holiday staple.
That one I would like. Oh my gosh. So you got peppermint, chocolate, coconut, caramel, whipped cream. Oh my gosh, that sounds awesome.
It does sound good.
I could go for one right now.
I got another food one, man.
Okay.
This is the popular Christmas dessert called malva pudding. This is a sweet and spongy baked dessert with a caramelized exterior texture. The interior is infused with apricot jam, doused in a creamy sauce while it's still hot, and then served warm with cold custard or ice cream. Malva pudding is believed to have been brought to South Africa by Dutch colonists in the 17th century, but with the addition of the local apricot jam, giving it a unique South African twist.
All of the food, I would say tonight, all of it sounds appealing to me. And just don't tell me it's tongue and I'll eat it.
And finally, in 1899, during the Second Boer War, the town of Ladysmith, South Africa, was besieged by the Boers. This is the Dutch-speaking farmers known as Afrikaners. And 21,000 British civilians and military personnel were trapped there.
When they said the Afrikaners, that's when we're supposed to hiss. Because they're the villains.
The Brits had abolished slavery, which significantly impacted the Boers. They relied heavily on slave labor and viewed the abolishment as intrusion into their way of life and challenged their social hierarchy. On Christmas, the Boers fired a shell containing a Christmas pudding, two flags, and a sign saying compliments of the season.
So maybe they're not so bad.
The Boers continued shelling the town that day, but the British celebrated the holiday with decorations and presents for children. That's pretty funny.
I like that. Yeah.
This calls for some Christmas music.
Yes, this Christmas music.
What kind of Christmas music is that?
The least you could do is play some Christmas music.
And now back to Christmas music.
All right, let's listening to some music.
Give me an African Christmas, peace and love to heal our land. We need an African Christmas, spend it together, hand in hand.
You know, most Africans are used to hearing a traditional European and American Christmas carols on the radio and television. Some nations began to reclaim and redefine Christmas through their own festive songs, like this one, Give Me an African Christmas by Ed Jordan. Ed Jordan is a popular South African musician, singer-songwriter, radio DJ, actor, and TV host.
Another multi-talented person. God.
He's not only known for his pop songs, but he's also a judge on the first season, Pop Stars in South Africa.
Did you ever watch Pop Stars? I think that was the first show before American Idol.
No kidding.
Yeah. Pop Stars came from the UK. Yeah, it was the same concept, and it was before American Idol.
Interesting. Well, yeah. Simon Cowell is from Britain. Did he pull that idea?
I think he did, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I never knew that. Yeah. But he spent 7 months putting together the group 101, whose debut CD went gold. He has also hosted the South African version of Deal or No Deal. And in 2005, he released a CD featuring Christmas carols and songs, including this original in his own African style. His song, African Christmas, is an effort to understand and represent how the birth of Jesus is received and celebrated within the African context. It's very powerful and moving. And every year, children across South Africa are taught the song. And what's interesting, when you watch the video, and it gives you all the different perspectives of South Africa. There's beautiful scenery, there's animals, but there's also pictures of children what appear to be in poverty. And so the song is beautiful, but I think he's sort of trying to represent, this is South Africa.
Yeah, this is a South African Christmas, yeah. Yep.
Wow. So I think he did a good job.
Yep. It's Christmas dinner.
Eat it, eat it.
Food they put out for Christmas Eve.
Eat it, eat it, eat it, eat it.
Most of your major food preparation holidays, Christmas.
Eat it.
What's up, food for Santa?
Eat it. If it's getting cold, reheat it.
There's no chili. No, chili's not a festive food.
Have a banana. Have a
So, Bob, let's go back to our pierogi initiative, our pierogi quest.
We end every show and I'm starving for bacon, buns, pies, whatever they are. Just give me one.
You know, I forgot to tell you last episode that the guy who said he's perfected the pierogi. One of the things, though, that I think is sort of, you know, you just kind of question, did you really? But he said the reason his is perfect is because I think he slaughters his own pig and cures his own bacon.
Oh.
So, I mean, if we have to do that.
I still want
to interview him.
Yes, I do. I do.
But tonight, this is really exciting. So we have interviewed Chef Ariana. Chef Ariana is a chef up here in Crystal Lake nearby us. In fact, last year, she was so kind to give us some food for our live show.
I know.
And so
and everybody raved about that food.
Yeah. So she's from Annie's Pots and Pies. And we're going to talk to her a little bit tonight about flour and yeast.
And we got to ask her too. Do they ship those pots and pies all over the world? Because all of our listeners will want some.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to a real chef because we're learning about cooking. How long have you been a chef?
More than 30 years.
our shop is a French American bakery, more pie shop than bakery. We do American pot pies and little hand pies, but we also do some French pastries and mostly focus on pies and pastries.
And the good thing for our purposes is you focus on savory pies. It's not just the fruit and the sweet ones, right?
We do quiches and pot pies, and a lot of our hand pies are savory as well. I have to apologize. I'm in the middle of making 100 almond croissants right now. Can't stop or the dough will get away from me.
Are you French? Is that your background?
Some of my heritage is French. Some of my heritage is Slovak. Some is Irish. And I identify mostly with my Basque heritage, which is a people from northern Spain, southern France.
Does that influence your cooking?
Sure. A lot of the things I do are Basque or from a Basque point of view.
Neither one of us are bakers like you, so we're really starting from scratch, and we thought we'd find an expert to help us with some tips. We thought maybe you could give us some insight on pie making. The first being some of the recipes we've looked at talk about yeast dough, and we're like, well, what the heck is yeast dough?
It's a bread dough, just like our normal bread that we would eat every day. It's not typical to have a yeast dough in a pie. Yeast dough requires fermentation and multiple mixing, kneading.
Is that too where you have to let it set for a little while?
You have to let it proof, they call it, or ferment for several hours. Some types of yeast doughs, you have to mix it down and knead it several times before you actually get the product out of the oven. Other yeast doughs are more simple, like a pizza crust is a yeast dough, and you would mix that up, let it ferment, let it proof. So you let it rest for 20, 30 minutes till it's double in size. Mash it down, knead it up, roll it out, and make your pizza. You don't have to let it raise again. But other things like croissants, you have to let it raise and knead it down, and then you have to let it raise and knead it down. Most people use packaged yeast because it's more sure to get the raise, but it needs something to eat. So a lot of people use a dash of sugar to get it to ferment quickly. But your basic bread dough is flour, yeast, water, and a pinch of salt. The flour provides sufficient amount of food for the yeast to eat. And then when the yeast is eating the food, it expels gas, which makes the dough rise. And these little tiny funguses take a while to eat enough to produce enough gas to raise the amount of flour you have.
What's scaring me is it sounds like this is going to be more like the croissant versus the pizza dough, and that sounds much more complicated.
I've not heard of these particular pies. I've not seen a recipe for them, so I couldn't advise you anything on those particular pies.
Different people have called them hand buns, buns, pies.
There's enriched yeast doughs where you add milk and egg besides just flour and water. And the enriched doughs, a lot of times, especially if it's an old recipe handed down, they call for scalding the milk because they didn't used to pasteurize the milk to kill any bacteria before you made your bread or your roll. So you would have a better product. Nobody would get sick.
It seems like these pies, they only have white onions, smoked bacon, or speck. Are you familiar with speck?
A speck style of bacon is going to be even more salty than American style bacon, whether it's smoked or not. A lot of salt goes into the preservation process. Depends on whether I'm using it for a topping, if I'm wrapping it with cheese inside. And everything has a place and a flavor. Breakfast style hand pies, where we do a scrambled egg with the pit ham, which is a lightly smoked ham, cheddar, green onions. And it's very nice. It would be completely different flavor if I used a speck or a prosciutto or the Spanish jamón serrano.
We need to find a real traditional recipe to see what they use, because we'd like to get it to be as original as possible. Sometimes they have them with pressed cottage cheese.
Or a farmer's cheese sometimes, like a dry cottage cheese. It's usually sold in ethnic neighborhoods where you got the imports. In a Polish store, you might be able to find it. And they'll have a lot of the Polish imports. My grandmother would always use it with cinnamon and sugar. And I think she added an egg to make a filling for kolachkis. And that was one of her favorites, was the dry cottage cheese.
I'm kind of leaning towards the speck, and I'm kind of leaning towards the dried cottage cheese, especially if that's what you'd find in Eastern Europe. That might be the route we want to go. Any advice in using yeast dough?
Just make sure you follow the recipe. You want to make sure it's always well-risen, well-proofed, so that the final product turns out well. If you underproof it or don't let it raise sufficiently, then it'll tend to be denser, heavier, tougher, not as nice to eat. You just have to watch your timing, is all.
What about cooking with the meat? Is there any advice with that, either bacon or the speck?
So speck is a completely different animal from American bacon. So I don't know what the recipe looks like, how it's put together or anything. So I can't advise you on what to expect there. But if I were going to make some kind of a yeast roll with bacon versus speck, you definitely have to par cook the bacon before you put it in the bun or roll, because there would be too much fat that would leach out in the cooking. With speck or prosciutto or anything like that, you don't have to pre-cook it. It's ready to use. It's not going to leach a ton of fat into the roll or onto the tray.
One thought we did have is smoking the bacon ourselves. What do you think of that?
Unless you've done it before, I wouldn't recommend it for a first time out of the gate. The brining process for bacon is quite involved. It takes a week, week and a half for the brining process. And then smoking, you get different flavors depending on which woods you use for smoke. But also, you have to smoke it at a very low temp because you don't want to completely cook and dry out your bacon. It's a lot more tricky than grabbing a pork belly and throwing some salt on it and throwing it in the smoker. If you're looking for American bacon versus speck, and frankly, alternative to speck would be more closely related to ham than a bacon. Even though they might call it a bacon, it's from the solid muscle. It's not from the pork belly. And so you're getting much more like a ham texture. You're getting more solid muscle. It's usually from the leg rather than the pork belly.
Any of the pies in your shop, do you put bacon in them?
I have done a poulet basque, which is chicken basque style, and it has bacon and ham, onions, garlic, tomato, and it's stewed with the chicken. And then we make that into a pot pie. Sometimes we make it into a hand pie. Bacon, we generally put on our croissant sandwich rather than in a pie. And we do the quiche Lorraine, which is bacon and caramelized onions baked with egg and cream and Gruyere cheese. Generally, we stick with our beef bourguignon and our chicken pot pie, our Irish curry chicken, and pepperade for our pot pies. Hand pies are kind of almost geared more toward lighter eating. So it's a barbecue chicken or mac and cheese, the ham and egg.
When you say a hand pie, what is that versus a pot pie?
So rather than being in a tin or in a pot, it's a piece of puff pastry. We put filling in and fold it over and close it. All kinds of fillings. Like we just got doing spinach and artichoke with feta this morning. We've got ham and spinach and cream cheese. We have the roast baby carrots from the farmer's market with brie in an open-faced tart. Those are fun.
I think that what we're talking about is a hand pie.
Doing the research so far, Bob, I think it's probably more like a hand pie, right? It sounds like they roll it out a little bit, put the bacon and the onion on the inside of the rolled out dough, wrap it over, bake it. And I think they braise it with butter once it's out too, with chef's help. I'm starting to understand a little bit of how this might work.
That's exactly right. With your discussion of hand pies, and that's what we're looking at. If you were going to help someone preparing a hand pie, what would you tell them? What would be your advice?
Don't put too much filling because it tends to burst while it's cooking. And it looks like it's not enough and you want to put more, but believe me. The end result will be better if you don't overfill it. Every once in a while, we do small roll. It's called a runza. It's popular in Nebraska, and that takes a ground beef filling. So it's onion, cabbage, ground beef, some light spices, not heavy spice at all. And then when the filling cools, you take a spoon of it and put it inside a small knot of bread dough and wrap it up so that the filling is on the inside and it looks like a regular bread roll on the outside. And then you have to let it raise and bake them off. And then when they come out of the oven, brush them with a little bit of melted butter. And people really seem to like them here. They're the size of a dinner roll. They're not very large at all. They've worked really well for us. And I think from what I read when we started to do those, that they were popular, especially like with farmers in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. That's probably the ethnic group that was in Nebraska. But it was popular with the farmers. They could take a couple, put them in their pocket, and have lunch while they're out in the fields. And it was nice and tasty and maybe still warm in their pocket. Along the same train of thought as the pasties in Cornwall. So the miners would take pasties with them, and that would be their lunch. It's a meat pie, basically, meat little hand pie. But that's with a short crust. It's not with the bread dough.
When Mark and I finally do complete these, and can we bring one in for you to sample to let us know how we did?
I'd love to see what the the end result was like.
You say that now.
We're finding a lot of variation that people have. So trying to do what's the traditional one gets difficult.
It's really the original recipe. Yeah.
You make things every day, and it takes us a year just to make one thing.
It's a never-ending process, I'm telling you.
I wanted to thank you.
This has been awesome. I feel more confident, Bob, that we can do this.
Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
It's trivia.
Let's talk about trivia, right? I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, it's often difficult to separate the dark days of apartheid when you think about South Africa, especially when you think that it's just 30 years ago.
And isn't that amazing when you think about 30 years ago?
Yeah. And when it comes to trivia and anecdotes about the country, it's hard to overlook that for decades, the world watched as Black South Africans lived under an oppressive regime that denied basic human rights to the majority of its people. However, it's important to remember that long before apartheid, South Africa was home to a powerful African kingdoms like the Zulus and the Susutus. South Africa is still healing today, but it's on a better path now to create more inclusivity and a just society. The Festa fans want to find joy and celebration in places like this. So while apartheid is an undeniable part of South Africa's past, it's not the whole story.
And you know, I'm so glad you pointed out that, you know what? There is a past before apartheid, and it's amazing past. Powerful kingdoms.
Yeah. Did you ever watch the miniseries Zulu?
I did not, but I knew a guy who loved it.
It was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, the world is big. The history of the world is long. After watching, I felt dumb not knowing many of the things I learned in that.
Yeah, but you know, think about it. Africa is the reason why we call it the Dark Continent. There's so much about Africa we're not taught. We don't know.
That's right. But for our fun facts, we wanted to highlight the staggering natural beauty of this land and abundant animal species. For example, there are giant earthworms in South Africa that grow to an average of 6 feet.
Can you imagine what that looks like after a rainstorm?
Oh my God. Also, they have jackass penguins that bray like mules and are the only wild penguin species in Africa. Or there's termite colonies in South Africa that are 34,000 years old and started when saber-toothed tigers still roamed the earth.
Mark, can you give an example of the braying penguin?
I don't know if that's really it. Or to draw attention to South Africa's rich cultural diversity, we thought about testing you about the Nguni stick fighting, which is a South African martial art form performed at weddings. Hey, weddings.
Hey, we could have done that last episode.
Where the newlyweds and families, armed with two long sticks, will spar until blood is drawn as a way to get to know each other.
Oh, that's awesome. So the two families fight until someone bleeds.
Also, we consider.
Why didn't you bring that up before Quinn's wedding? We could have fought the Meyer family until they bled.
Somebody was going to bleed. I was just afraid I might get hurt. Also, we considered asking about how South Africa is the only country in the world to have both polygamy and same-sex marriage legally recognized.
Oh, wow. Very progressive.
Yep. There's also the Verdefort crater that is 200 miles across and was created 2 billion years ago by an asteroid striking Earth. We even thought to ask you about how South Africa was the first nation to develop its own nuclear weapons, but then voluntarily dismantled them later on.
That's impressive. I love that one.
But we're going to go really simple here, Bob. Something very, very direct. What do South Africans call traffic lights?
Wait a minute. We went through all of that? There's so many other cool things.
I know. That's kind of lame. I'm sorry.
Wow. It must be something interesting though, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I hope you know it. But if you can answer this episode's trivia questions, you can celebrate and know that you've set free our 4F vinyl stickers. They may be small and insignificant, but they fight bravely, clinging to our laptops and water bottles, while at the same time being stretched, adhered, and cruelly scratched and peeled. You no longer need to look away or fail to speak out. Through your efforts, you have earned the right to stand tall by giving our powerless sticky friends the respect and dignity they deserve.
I love that. Power to the stickers.
Power to stickers. Well, as we close out, my quote is from Nelson Mandela.
Oh, perfect, Mark.
In 1990, he said, "Let us vow never to celebrate another Christmas in chains. We have a right to be free, and we shall be free."
Oh my gosh, that is so perfect, so apt.
So, great movie, great country to learn about. But, as we talked about earlier on, next month, boo. I'm not booing. Ghosts say boo. We kick off our October season for a month-long crossover event of Yuletide cheer and slasher fear.
Wow.
We first sneak up to visit our northerly neighbor, Canada, to watch the 1974 Black Christmas. This is a cult classic that has been remade twice and is considered one of the first slasher films. It was directed by Bob Clark, who would go on to direct A Christmas Story.
That is so crazy to me.
I know. Black Christmas, you can find that on AMC+, Shudder, Tubi. It's also available to rent on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, YouTube, Google Play, iTunes, and also on Peacock, too.
So this is one that's really available.
Really, it's really everyone a good movie. Should see everyone that. Should watch this yeah. movie. It is very, very good. There's some famous actors and actresses in this movie as well where you're going to be like, oh my God, look who that is. But before we leave, we just want to say that it's not you. It is not you. It is us. Bob and I are afraid of commitment, but after 2 years and so many hours together, we're in too deep. The Festive fans may be a mess, and we are, but we're your mess now. So own it. Stand up to it.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, Mark. I'm glad to know it wasn't me.
It's not us. I think it might be Jake. Good night, Jake.
Good night, Jake.
Actually, we're done.
Done. It's over. Over. It's over.
It's over. Kaput. Finito.
It's over. It's over.
It's over. This has been a Waysound Studio production.
And sound engineering on our show is by Jake Fontana.